China will provide $2 billion over 2 years to help with COVID-19 response.
That money, says the Chinese president, will go to the World Health Organization. This is Tuesday, the 19th of May, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, the U.S. Congress argues over another big financial push. Pandemic controls in Australia are separating families of migrant workers. It is all on today's VOA Asia. China announces it's giving a lot of money to the World Health Organization. The story from AP's Sagar Mughani.
As President Trump continues blasting China and the World Health Organization over their virus response, Beijing is rallying around the WHO. Speaking through an interpreter at the World Health Assembly,
China will provide $2 billion over 2 years to help with COVID-19 response.
Chinese President Xi Jinping's pledge comes as the Trump administration has slashed the UN Health Agency's funding and tried to undermine its credibility, with the president saying it helped China conceal the pandemic's extent early on. Sagar Mughani, Washington.
The head of the World Health Organization says he will begin an independent evaluation of the UN Health Agency's response to the coronavirus pandemic at the earliest appropriate moment. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus made the pledge Monday after an independent oversight advisory body published its first interim report about the UN Health Agency's response to COVID-19 from January to April.
To be successful, we must all commit to mutual ownership and accountability. One way to do that, proposed by the Africa Group last year, is through a system of universal periodic review, in which countries agree to a regular and transparent review of each nation's preparedness. We urge countries to proceed with caution. Countries that move too fast without putting in place the public health architecture to detect and suppress transmission, run a real risk of handicapping their own recovery. The risk remains high, and we have a long road to travel.
The 11-page report raised questions such as whether WHO's warning system for alerting the world to outbreaks was adequate and suggested member states might need to reassess WHO's role in providing travel advice to countries. The advisory body's review and recommendations appeared unlikely to appease the United States administration, which has been scathing in its criticism of WHO, in part over President Donald Trump's allegation that it had criticized the U.S. travel ban that he ordered on people arriving from China, where the outbreak first appeared late last year. We invite you to read more on our top stories by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Chinese President Xi Jinping backs calls for an independent investigation into the origins of the coronavirus outbreak, but only after the pandemic is under control. Narcotics police in Myanmar seize a large amount of liquid fentanyl. Malaysia's parliament convened Monday to hear a formal address by the king and then adjourn just as quickly, allowing Prime Minister Muhyiddin Yassin to escape a no-confidence vote. Tensions between Hong Kong's two competing forces reached another flashpoint. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and at the voanews.com website. Do American workers need more financial help from the government? That is the question being argued by U.S. lawmakers as another coronavirus relief bill now goes to the Senate. Many Democrats and Republicans have very different views on what it's going to take to help the U.S. economy after it was devastated by the pandemic. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has the story.
As U.S. businesses continue to slowly reopen, how to repair the economic damage caused by the pandemic is a partisan issue.
Is passed.
The $3 trillion coronavirus relief bill passed in the U.S. House of Representatives reflects the differences between Republicans and Democrats.
First, open the economy, test, test, test. Two, we want to honor our heroes by helping state and local entities. And three, we want to put money in the pockets of the American people.
With a presidential election just months away, the latest bill, Republicans say, is packed with Democratic priorities.
It's got so much unrelated to the coronavirus, it is dead on arrival here in terms of a viable idea. The amount of money and the way you spend the money and the unrelated provisions in the bill make it impossible for it to get out of the Senate.
The bill includes student debt forgiveness and financial assistance to frontline health care workers, renters and homeowners, and farmers. The legislation would also allow undocumented immigrants to get payments if they file taxes.
Nancy Pelosi basically lost me with that package when she has $1,200 checks for illegal immigrants, and it just goes downhill from there.
But Vermont Senator and former Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders says another stimulus act is critical.
There are people today who cannot afford to go to a doctor even when they have coronavirus symptoms. If you're concerned about the working class of this country, understand the extraordinary suffering, unprecedented, that is now taking place. Demand that Congress act.
Sanders says the Senate needs to improve on the current legislation to help people who aren't working during the pandemic.
I happen to believe that we should go in the direction of a paycheck security process similar to what has been done in Europe, which says to every worker in America, you will continue to receive your paycheck and the other benefits which you had when you were on the job. And when this crisis is over, hopefully sooner than later, you're just going to go back to work.
But White House trade advisor Peter Navarro says President Donald Trump has a different plan to grow the economy.
For every service sector job we might lose as we adjust to this China virus, we're going to have to replace that with manufacturing jobs, which do have a high multiplier in terms of creating service sector jobs again. So what I'm focused on with President Trump is a Buy American, deregulate, innovate agenda, which will start with bringing our pharma supply chains home, bringing our medical supplies and equipment supply chains home. So we build it here. That'll be both good economics, but also good national security.
With the current bill unlikely to get Senate approval, Pelosi says the Democrats are open to negotiating with the Republicans. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News.
In the five or so months since the world first began to cope with what is now the worst pandemic in living memory, health workers have continued to put their lives on the line. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with nurse Rihanna Moret, a nurse who helps manage other nurses and healthcare workers in the COVID units at Jackson Memorial Hospital in Miami, Florida.
I have been in that unit now for a little bit over a month, helping stabilize the unit, helping manage the flow of the unit, and helping manage the nurses, just making sure everybody's wearing proper PPE and being a support system for the staff and patients themselves.
So you were the patients too?
I'm not their primary nurse, but I do have to go into the room many times when they have questions or concerns. The truth is, the patients that are here are very scared. You're alone. They don't know what's going on. They see these astronaut-looking people going into their rooms day in and day out, and just to have them be able to connect helps them a lot.
Has it been hard for you personally to adjust to working constantly on a COVID ward?
At the beginning, I was terrified. But the fact that Jackson has given us what we need in order to feel safe has helped a lot. We always have what we need to work together and protect everybody, both the patient and the nurses. If healthcare workers do not protect themselves, we can be carriers and we can be the ones spreading this even more than what is being spread already.
Do you have enough nursing staff?
I've been very blessed to have nurses who want to come back and work in these units because of how safe they feel. They'd rather work in a COVID unit knowing what to expect than work in a regular floor where they don't know who has COVID.
You can have great protection, but there is still so much that is unknown about COVID-19.
It's exactly what you just said. You do not know who really has COVID or not until they are swabbed and come back positive.
How have you managed to cope with all this uncertainty and trauma?
At the beginning, it was very hard for me. In the first few weeks from being in a COVID unit, I found myself just wanting to lay in bed all day. I was seeing what nurses were going through. I was seeing what patients were going through. I was seeing the hard truth of what this virus does. Nursing takes a toll on you physically, mentally, on a regular day. And now you throw in a virus that we don't know about. It's just an added stress to you. So I had to find a way to cope with it. I had to find a way to know that giving all that I can is making a difference. I would love to get back to my normal life, but until then, I am here. I'm here to fight this war, and I am proud to be part of a healthcare system that truly shows that they care about their nurses and always make sure that they feel safe in this crazy world that we're living right now.
Do you think that the public is actually grateful for everything you guys are doing?
The support that we are receiving from the community is amazing. On a daily basis, I receive multiple messages through Facebook or Instagram from people who don't even know me, just reaching out and saying, hey, thank you for helping. You know, like when a lot of us are afraid and at home, you guys are out there and you're doing everything you can for these patients.
What's your personal situation?
I have two boys. They are currently with my parents who have been taking care of them for the past month and a half. It's been very hard for them, especially for the little one. He doesn't understand why he can't come around mom or why I can't hug him or why I can't give him a kiss. So I'm very lonely right now.
What is the outlook, in your opinion, going forward?
We're projecting hopefully by June to see a drop in numbers. But that all depends on the public and how they react to the opening of certain areas in the city.
Here in New York, and I think it's also true in Miami, people are going out without masks on. That must feel almost like a personal affront.
It really is. When I'm on my way to work, I'm just astonished. I see what I'm going through and what my nurses are going through. And when I come out to the public, it just hurts. The fact that people are not taking this as serious as they should be. Due to that, we're going to see an increase in numbers. It's mandatory to wear a mask. But in my own building where I live in, people are not wearing masks. They just get into the elevators with their fellow neighbors, and I don't know what planet they're living in. The least we can do is protect one another.
VOA's Adam Phillips speaking with nurse Rihanna Moret. Happening now in Asia, a suicide bomber in a stolen military Humvee targeted a base in eastern Afghanistan belonging to the country's intelligence service early Monday, killing at least 9 members of the force. The Taliban claims responsibility. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us here on VOA Asia. Events and event planning are among the societal casualties of the coronavirus pandemic. In 2020, in the United States, the biggest among them could be national political nominating conventions. VOA's Steve Reddish examines what a virtual political convention might look like and how it may change the way American politics is conducted.
Welcome to what a virtual political convention might look like. Connecting delegates from all 50 states plus U.S. territories to cast their votes to select who will run for president and vice president from their party.
You have to have a vote.
Elaine Kmark is an American politics expert at the Brookings Institution.
You have to have a majority of the delegates voting for the nominee. And then there's literally a piece of paper that goes to the Federal Election Commission. When I was young, I brought it up to Walter Mondale on the podium and had him sign it. And that essentially puts you on the ballot in all the 50 states.
Weeks ago, Democrats decided to move their planned in-person convention from mid-July to mid-August, just before the Republican convention. Democratic Party leader Tom Perez says the party will keep public health in mind as it continues to plan for a convention of thousands in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, amid the uncertainty of the pandemic. Presumptive presidential nominee Joe Biden suggested Democrats plan for a virtual convention. How would that be fully executed?
There needs to be at least what I would think of as 3 different platforms.
Laura Brown runs George Washington University's Graduate School of Political Management.
There needs to be one secure platform for the delegates to be able to cast their votes, to be able to do their business.
That business? Select a party nominee for president and vice president. Instead of crowding the convention floor, imagine a Zoom meeting for 5,000. Keeping the signal strong and secure for hours and days at a time.
Then there needs to be another type of platform for participatory engagement for partisans from all across the country to be able to weigh in and actually give voice to some of their ideas and their preferences. Then I think there needs to be a third platform that is about the production of the show.
How does a virtual convention translate on television for 4 nights?
I'm not sure that producing a TV show without 20,000 people in an arena is going to be any worse than, you know, what we traditionally have. And there are more creative minds than mine that could certainly come up with a good way to do a television show.
And the show is likely going to be a very complicated one in which probably no one has a better sense of that than kind of the major broadcast networks who do these kinds of live events like the Super Bowl.
Republicans have not ruled out a virtual convention, but in a tweet, President Donald Trump mocked Biden for his virtual convention idea, suggesting he has something to hide. Okay. But Laura Brown believes a virtual convention could make politics more participatory and transparent.
The one thing this would allow is for more of the people to view the sausage-making process of politics.
Steve Reddish, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. India recorded its biggest single-day surge in coronavirus cases Monday. The 5,242 new cases and 157 deaths over the past 24 hours took the country's infection tally to more than 96,000, the most in Asia. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue now. Strict COVID-19 controls in Australia are separating families of migrant workers who have been stuck overseas since its international borders were closed. Temporary visa holders do not have the same rights to return to Australia as citizens during the pandemic. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
A song for ScoMo, a colloquial term for Scott Morrison, from an American temporary visa holder. The Australian Prime Minister is being urged to let migrant workers stranded overseas return to their jobs, homes and families. Hundreds of foreign workers, including those from the US, Britain, South Africa and Brazil, had temporarily left Australia to go on holiday, to study or attend funerals before the COVID-19 pandemic forced the government in Canberra to close the borders. They've been left stranded away from family, partners and jobs in Australia. Chloe Fletcher moved from England to Perth, but is separated from her 16-year-old son, Taylor. He was in Britain studying for exams when Australia's borders were closed and has been refused permission to rejoin his family.
For any mother to be away from the child for that long, the pain's unbearable. It's like every day, it's hard. So I don't understand what the actual boundaries are of what makes a compassionate case, because there's no actual rules or regulations, so you don't know what category you fit into.
Australia closed its borders to foreign nationals on March 20. Authorities say decisions about who's allowed to return under special circumstances are made in the interests of public health. Officials stress that shutting international borders has been one of the key factors in Australia's ability to control the spread of the coronavirus. Australian citizens and permanent visa holders are permitted to return, but face a mandatory 14-day quarantine period in a hotel paid for by the government. Australia has had about 7,000 confirmed COVID-19 cases. The vast majority of patients have recovered, but about 100 people have died from the virus. Lockdown restrictions are gradually being eased across the country. Cafes, restaurants, places of worship and schools are reopening under strict hygiene controls. But those desperate for Australia's international borders to reopen face a long and uncertain wait. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Are my pets safe from coronavirus? There's no current evidence that cats and dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria such as E. coli and Salmonella that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit the websites at the World Health Organization and the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
Now on VOA Asia, the pandemic has put lives of students on hold, especially high school graduates who have been unable to celebrate the completion of their secondary education with the traditional senior dance, prom, and graduation ceremony. To save the day, award-winning photographer Matt Mendelson volunteered to photograph each one of the 500 seniors of Yorktown High School in Arlington, Virginia. Each portrait encapsulates the graduates' talents, hopes, and aspirations. VOA's Penelope Pulu spoke with the photographer and some of the graduates.
Just kind of lean on that typewriter top, like that. Yeah, like it's more comfortable. There you go.
Award-winning photographer Matt Mendelson turns his lens on the graduates of Yorktown High School in his neighborhood in Arlington, Virginia.
I just had this idea that I would boost their spirits a little by going around and taking pictures, creating a photo essay of this sort of forgotten class of 2020, and we called it Not Forgotten, the Yorktown Seniors of 2020.
Their school year, like those elsewhere in the country, was cut short due to the pandemic. So were their plans on celebrating graduation. Mendelson says what started as a chronicle of loss for each of these 500 students soon morphed into a tribute to their hopes and dreams.
I ask each senior what they're about, what they love. So each senior is photographed differently based on what they're passionate about, what they love to do.
For Grayson, it's books, poetry, and educating others.
I'm going to be a dual degree for elementary education and early childhood education. So I'll be able to teach from kindergarten all the way to sixth grade. And I'd love to have a book published one day.
Jonathan Saldana wants to be an astronomer.
Actually, it was our unit on lenses and focal points that made me want to build my telescope and why I wanted to put it in my picture, because I feel it's a big part of who I am.
Here we go.
Galilee dreams going into medicine. She was devastated when she heard the school was closing early and graduation ceremony was canceled.
I feel like my memories were kind of robbed for me, so this would be like a good memory that I could like show my kids and would be like forever ingrained in my mind.
Rowan, an aspiring history and philosophy student, finds Mendelssohn's Not Forgotten project more intimate than the traditional high school graduation.
I love the idea behind the shoot, like a personal sense of validation or accomplishment, you know, as opposed to just being another person out of 500.
Yorktown High School seniors are anything but forgotten. Mendelssohn's shoot has gone viral the world over.
I'm getting emails from people from Sydney, Australia, saying, good luck to the seniors of Yorktown High School. We're thinking about you. From Sydney, Australia. It's just a project that was meant to boost the spirits of this senior class, who, like a lot of other senior classes around America, they're all the same. They're all very smart. They're all very passionate. And they all had a chunk of their senior year just evaporate. So it was started out to be a boost, and it's gone crazy.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for being with us, and thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team that includes Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Fofaboon, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a great day ahead.